You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming out and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald.
And my name is Supreme Chancellor Kevin.
And Kevin, what are we talking about tonight?
We're going to have a brief podcast conversation about a classical actor, you know, who's been around since the 1980s, someone that we grew up with as children. He was basically our first theatrical Batman, Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton? You're talking about the Vulture?
Well, he would later become the Vulture. He would later become Birdman. I mean, he would later become
That's
all.
That's true. He was Birdman before he was the Vulture.
Yeah, he has this thing. Well, what's with these flying creatures? Bats, vultures, Birdman. I mean, what's up with that? I mean, he just has a thing for flying creatures.
So basically, we're going to be talking about Michael Keaton. We're going to be talking a lot about Batman and within the Batman universe and how
all these rumors
he's become ingratiated, ingrained, if you will, in the universe of Batman itself.
That's right.
Now, of course, it's because of the original Tim Burton Batman
1989
movie. But goes a little deeper because a lot of people throughout the years really wanted him to become older Bruce Wayne in the Batman Beyond canon that they want desperately to be a movie.
And now, I guess dreams might be coming true in the next couple of years. If they can get a deal cut, you know, they're saying that things are still in negotiations, but if they can really get this done right, and if they can't get it right, they're stupid. But I have a feeling AT&T, as you know, as a side note, pushed the Snyder Cut for the Justice League movie. So I'm sure they want to build up that, what's it called? The HBO, is HBO Max?
Yeah.
They want to build it up, just like how Disney Plus is being built up. They need to have that. So I think this is all in line with that. They want to really come out swinging hard to compete with their corporate arch rival. And I think this would be a great way. We'll bring Michael Keaton in, do whatever you got to do, get him in there, get this done.
Right.
And Tim Burton, bring him back as well.
Do you remember when Coca-Cola bought Sony Pictures? Or not Sony, MGM...
Not MGM. Columbia TriStar.
Yeah. Do you remember when they bought that?
They were very young. It was like in the 80s.
Right. And do you remember how much of a disaster it was for them?
Like, yeah, it was.
It was not successful at all, and they really wanted to unload it.
And they did.
I have a feeling in like 5 to 10 years, we're going to see AT&T doing the same thing.
It's a possibility. I mean, what I can foresee, and I was talking about this, I mentioned this in a Zoom meeting, I can foresee the remaining studios that haven't been bought out yet being scooped up by Amazon, Google, Netflix, Facebook, you know, all these giant tech firms. They're going to come in and just say, you know what, we're going to gobble up the rest because they have the power to, they have the money to. It's no big deal.
Well, it's interesting, how they're doing the synergy thing and how they're making this. For example, Netflix purchased the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood.
Yes, I heard about that
and
recently.
And they're doing that so they can premiere movies there for as long as they want, so they can make them Oscar contenders and still stream them at the same time.
Yep, and they have the power to do so because, like you said, they have the synergy. They have all the levels of distribution at their disposal.
And here's what I hear. A little birdie's told me that Amazon is very hungry for AMC.
AMC theaters?
AMC theaters,
well,
yes.
Well, you know what's funny? Now's the time because you can get them cheap on the dollar, whatever.
Much like Chuck E. Cheese, let's be honest.
Yeah. If there was ever a time to swoop in and take over, this is the time because they could definitely get them. I'm going to say pennies on the dollar. They can definitely get them for pennies on the dollar.
Yep.
Because AMC is going through what it's going through, and Amazon certainly has a lot of cash.
We're all aware that there's this COVID-19 thing going on, and it's been going on for a while, and it's going to continue to go on for a while. It is what it is. Just wear your mask and be safe and you know, when you go out in public and just you keep your distance and stuff and everything's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like theaters and stuff, it's become extremely difficult. What I've noticed, if you've ever – recently, have you sat down at a sit-down restaurant and tried
– No.
Okay. Prices at most of these sit-down restaurants have gone up.
Oh, no, the other way around. They've gone up.
Right. They've gone up in a significant amount for some of these places. Not all. Don't get me wrong. But some of these places have seen a significant rise in cost, particularly because they have to make themselves COVID-proof, so to speak.
True. They have to take these measures to make sure that...
Right. They have to keep the space. Every other table. Set up and, the servers have to wear masks and shield guards.
The glass shield guards. Everything.
Yes.
That makes sense.
All of that. That makes sense. I recently ate at a sit-down restaurant. It was my first one.
In months, yeah.
In months and months and months. I felt a little uncomfortable, but I also was excited to be able to do it, you know, to feel a little more normal again. It's hard to feel a little more normal when somebody's wearing a why so serious Heath Ledger kind of mask with a shield guard when they come up to take your order, and it's a little hard to hear. But right. Yeah. It's better than, you know, having to wait outside and them dropping it, you know, on a table, and then you pick it up, and then you take it to your car and you put hand sanitizer on. One of those situations. But I digress. I think we're getting a little away from topic here. But so Michael Keaton, the man's kind of a legend.
Yes, he is.
In the industry.
Yes, he is.
He's somebody that, Jesus, would he be like our Jack Nicholson? Could we say that? Like, is he that level?
Coincidentally enough, of course, he did a movie with Jack Nicholson, you know, in that first Batman, which, you know, good pairing there.
Absolutely.
Good pairing there. They played off each other very well.
An amazing pairing. And it's funny because Jack Nicholson took the back end.
Yes, he did. He's smart. He was smart.
He said, I'll take less contractually up front.
Just give me the back end.
Just give me whatever the profits are for this film.
And he got plenty of it, didn't he?
When you're that good of an actor, you know, and people follow you, yeah, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
It's Jack Nicholson. You know, you hear that name, you know, it has carries weight.
Here's the thing. If Jack Nicholson ever came up short, let's say he was at the McDonald's drive through and they're like, it's $4.12. And he's like, I have $4. All he'd have to do is say he's going to do a movie. He's good. He's golden.
Of course.
And money will just fall at his feet.
Jack is one of those, you know, legendary actors, legendary entertainment figures that his presence is enough.
Yep. In a lot of people's eyes, he retired too soon. Mm-hmm. Sean Connery, yeah, same thing, really.
If almost 20 years now. Yeah.
You know, if people said, hey, Sean Connery's coming back, you know, shit, let's throw money at it.
People get excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Michael Keaton, let's hope he doesn't think that way. Mm. We need a multiplicity too, Kevin.
Yes, I know you're excited about that.
And our good friend of the podcast, Derek Armijo, he also agrees with us, I believe, on that multiplicity too.
Good. There you go. There you go. But this would be a great way to cap off the trilogy that Michael Keaton should have completed, him and Tim Burton would have completed, had it not been for, you know, Warner Brothers office politics at the time back in the early to mid-90s that prevented them from doing the third Batman. And I was looking into this. I was always curious as to why they never did a third movie together. And a lot of it had to do with the darkness, the dark tone nature of Batman Returns from 1992. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that I guess they didn't sell as many toys as they would have liked to.
Well, because it was darker.
It was darker. And of course...
I mean, they did do the penguins, but you can only sell so many penguin with missile
and
toys.
And Catwoman and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I understand this is what you have, that classical conflict between the art of film. Mm-hmm. And the commerce of film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the executives are looking at this saying to yourself, you know what? We didn't make as much money merchandise-wise. I mean, you know, you made a pretty good movie, but the problem is, you know, Tim's a little too dark. Yeah.
That's why it blows my mind with Justice League, how they made it so dark in a way that – how can you sell toys with that?
If that's what you want to do.
Batman versus Superman, how can you sell toys? Superman, the Man of Steel, how can you sell toys when he's breaking the guy's neck?
I know. And especially the fact you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on these movies – and I think they're trying to be so different from the MCU. That's why, well, let's go in this direction and maybe this will get us. And then they realize, you know what? We made a mistake. Now, you don't have to copy the MCU, but obviously Aquaman and Shazam.
Man, yeah. I say emulate the shit out of it. Just follow that formula.
You can emulate it. Just do it in your own way. And guess what? It worked for Aquaman especially.
You will do it in your own way if you just stay true to the characters.
And guess what? With Aquaman, it worked.
Right. It's all you have to do.
I mean, think about it. Aquaman was a joke in the comic books for a while. Aquaman was young, you know, they had a movie, Aquaman from Entourage, that was kind of seen as a joke. And it's mm-hmm. funny how trying to find the right word here, reality mimicking, art imitating life.
Yep.
The fact that they had an episode where, or a couple episodes, he's shooting a movie on Aquaman, he's playing Aquaman, and it's a big hit. We know James Cameron's like the director, and to think that years later they really do an Aquaman movie, and it ends up being basically their highest grossing movie.
Yeah.
Among all those DC movies, it's the funniest thing. No one would ever saw it coming. You would have thought it would have been a Batman movie, a Batman versus Superman, or even the... I mean, think about it. It made more money than Justice League. How crazy is that?
It is... I mean, people know quality when they see it, and I hate to say it, but that was a quality film. Actually, I don't hate to say it. I'm happy to say it.
Black Panther. A lot of it emulates parts of Black Panther.
It does. But I feel like the final act was better.
It's different. It's different. Different and executed a little bit better. I could probably agree with you on that a little bit.
But I still like... I think the first two-thirds of Black Panther is some of the best superhero movie-dom I've ever seen. Like, it's amazing. It's so good.
It's just the final third is what throws you off. Like, one thing I agree with that when it came to that movie, you know, Claw, I wish he would have lasted longer.
Oh, my God.
I wish he could have made it back.
Andy Serkis, if you're listening, you killed it as Claw. I mean, just crushed it.
Especially in Age of Ultron when he made his first appearance.
Yes.
It was fun.
And I argue about this all the time. If you go back, anybody listening, if you go back and you watch Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, it'll be a much better film than you first watch it during.
It's funny you mentioned it. I actually rewatched somebody because I got Disney Plus recently.
Did you? Okay.
I got Disney Plus, so I actually started rewatching some of these movies. So I rewatched Iron Man 2. I hate it even more than the first time I did. So I haven't watched it in 10 years. Can't stand it. I watched it again. It's like you can tell that Mickey Rourke didn't want to be there. You know, it's just – it's a storyline's just – ugh.
And yeah, I rewatched that recently as well.
I rewatched, Age of Ultron, and I actually appreciated it better.
Yeah.
I actually do appreciate it. But I said, you know what? This isn't too bad. You know, first time around, I was kind of like, eh. I mean, I'm rewatching it now. And maybe because of what's happened since, I have a greater appreciation.
That's exactly why. Because of what took place after.
That's right.
Because it foreshadowed. It was doing such a good job of foreshadowing everything to come that it forgot where it was.
Yes.
And when you go back, it makes more sense as a complete story now. And that's the point of that film. We did not know that.
It's part of the tapestry, you know.
Right. It's the masterfulness of Whedon that really just kind of lets us know.
By the way, on Disney Plus, you got to check this out. This is really cool. I think it's on the Age of Ultron one or Age of... No, I think it's on Infinity War after I was finished watching that. They have, you know, all the different extra stuff. They have a cool one where all the directors, at least all the major directors, they're actually sitting down at a table just talking about all the movies. So you have...
Oh, nice.
You have the Russo brothers. You have Joss Whedon. You have James Gunn. You have Ryan Coogler. You have Taika Waititi. You have all these guys just sitting down. Peyton Reed. That's the other person. They're all sitting down just talking about... Oh, and Jon Favreau. My gosh, I can't forget Jon Favreau. It starts with him. So they're all, you know, giving each other props.
Jon gives such good stories.
He's
a very good interviewer.
Yeah, he's a great interviewer. Or interviewee.
Yeah, whichever you want to look at it.
So, you know, he's sitting there, you know, it all starts with him. So everyone's giving him his props, and he's breaking things down. You know, they're all talking about when they're at Ryan Coogler's, you know, the Black Panther premiere. Like, yeah, we're all there, and we're all supporting him. We're just blown away by how he did. And, you know, they're all just comparing different segments. It was like a half an hour documentary, but basically they did, you know, the first part was like story, you know, about character first. And they talked about that, how you did a great job with Tony Stark, how establishing him as a character. And it's so true. If you can at least get the character done first and have a character that you believe in and have the audience support and want to learn more about and follow, you already won half the battle. The problem with a lot of these movies and a lot of those DC movies, the initial early DCU movies, was that they were focusing too much on the visual effects and not character. And I think that really hurt them initially until they got their Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Shazam did a better job. So it's just a classic story writing or anything. It all starts with story. Build character first and then worry about the other stuff later. So as long as you learn that lesson, the MCU, for the most part, most of the films understand that. You have characters that you sympathize. In fact, I watched Doctor Strange again, too, after that, you know, and I was like, oh, you know what? I like this, especially all the cool effects. But beyond that, I did feel some of the characterization. I liked the way Baron Mordo and Strange interacted with each other.
Yeah.
And also Wanda later on, like all three of them at one point. I actually liked it, all three of them together.
It was great.
It was fun. All three of them together, you know, when they're doing their thing, it's just fun. And even a good job by Tilda Swinton playing the Ancient One.
Yeah.
And matter of fact,
that was controversial, though.
Yes.
We've got to admit. But
it worked.
It did. And look, I'm all for diversity. I really am, 100%. But a good placement of an actor or actress in a role is a good placement. And I felt she did the best she could with what she was given. And plus, it's not her fault.
Plus, they didn't overuse her either. That's the
right,
best part.
Yeah.
They didn't overuse
her. And it's not her fault that she was chosen for that role.
Right.
She was just the best that they thought, the choice was. And mm-hmm. We have to be as okay with it as we can be without being going too much into ourselves on it, in other words.
By the way, I like Rachel McAdams, too, and her small part. You know, that was pretty cool. I liked her smaller role, you know, just being like, you know, the girlfriend or just like kind of sound like the love interest, but not really that subtle love interest. You
Rachel
know, in the hospital.
Adams, she is she wasn't the one that played Clark Kent's Lois Lane, right? Okay, because that's the other
that's
girl.
Amy Adams.
I always get them confused. So Rachel McAdams actually was just in a movie with Will Ferrell.
Mm-hmm.
About a European singing contest.
Oh, really?
It's the weirdest damn thing. It's on Netflix now. It's relatively new, so if you get a chance, check it out.
Okay.
But it's so weird, I can't even remember the name of it. It's like Eurovision.
Something like that.
The story of something fire, and I'm sorry. But it's like, actually pretty random and pretty good. Like, I didn't – it's over 2 hours long. For a Will Ferrell comedy.
Wow.
That's
something.
Yes.
Now, getting back on topic, this is probably my fault.
That's okay.
Do you believe Batman Beyond, if this is the path they're going to go for this third Batman movie involving Tim Burton and Michael Keaton, would it be best to put it on as a pure HBO Max film as a way to draw people in, or would you think it should be put out there to the box office? Straight to theatrical release?
Straight to theater.
Okay.
Straight to theater. And I think they have enough time to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Like, if this whole thing, like, subsides and we're able to get back into the movie theaters, I think it's important that they do that as a draw.
Especially the way you can market it, too. It's like, you know, the return of, you know,
right.
Michael Keaton. And here's the best part. The way that they're formulating things is basically we're seeing, like, their version of the multiverse.
Yeah. It is. It,
so you can have
their Michael way of correcting all these mistakes.
Yes. And it's clever because, okay.
Very clever.
We can have Michael Keaton. We can have even Christian Bale. We can have Ben Affleck's Batman. We can even have the new guy, Rob Pattinson's Batman. It's okay. They all exist in their own different Earths.
Something I just told somebody recently that stands true. Marvel always shied away from multiple universes and stuff. They had them, but they're not like – they try to like dance around them.
Mm-hmm.
DC fully embraced that shit.
Well, Crisis of Infinite Earths. Yeah, absolutely.
Since the 80s. They were like, let's get this shit going and let's not stop.
And DC probably realized, you know what? We're technically the originators of this concept, so why are we not doing this?
Yeah.
And that's probably what they're thinking. So you know what? Let's just jump on this. In other words, you set it up in such a way so people understand that it's okay to have all these different Batmans and there's context behind this.
Mm-hmm.
And already, even though I haven't seen many of the shows on TV on the CW.
Speaking
of. They've already, I've heard they're using that concept of the multiverse.
Right. And speaking of which, if you have yet to see the Stargirl series on the CW,
mm-hmm.
highly recommend it.
Okay.
It's some of the best superhero television I've seen in years.
Oh, really? Well, that's good to hear.
And that's coming from somebody that loves Legends of Tomorrow. I really do. I love Legends of Tomorrow. And in fact, I don't know if you know this, but they did a Crisis of Infinite Earths crossover.
I heard about it, yeah.
Last year.
How was it?
I haven't seen it.
I
have not seen it. It's a five-parter, if I recall. And I want to sit down and marathon it on like a Saturday or Sunday and just watch all of it.
Didn't they bring back Superman from Superman Returns? What's the gentleman's name?
Brandon Ralph?
Ralph?
Yeah, he's actually playing the Atom in Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay.
So it wasn't a stretch. But they also brought back Dean Cain.
Yes, that's right. I heard about that. Rodney came back from his 90s Superman,
and I'm
basically.
Not sure, but I also heard rumors of Tom Welling, but I'm not 100% sure if he came back
as awesome.
Well. But it was funny because I saw a picture online of Brandon Ralph was in an airplane, and he took a picture because Dean Cain was sitting behind him.
Oh, nice.
A couple rows back.
Oh, nice.
And he was like, wow, there's two Supermans on a plane. This is weird.
That's cool.
And I will say that Dean Cain, to me, in my heart of hearts, because he hit the right age for me. He was my Superman.
Like, worse than Christopher Reeve? Oh, I guess Christopher Reeve is like our little boy Superman.
Right.
We're like little kids.
Christopher Reeve is our little boy Superman.
Okay.
Dean Cain was my teenage year Superman.
Gotcha. I agree.
He was the one that was like, that dude bagged Terry Hatcher.
Yep.
And holy shit. If you were
Also, he also developed the modern day version of Clark Kent.
Right. And if you were close to our age at that time, the Terry Hatcher with the Superman cape draped over her half naked, that broke the internet when the internet was first discovered. No shit. It was the most downloaded and viewed picture of like all time.
Plus that old side job of ours, we used to see her in person come in.
Arclight. And that's actually, right. I had a conversation with Pa Kent from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
Oh, by the way.
In fact, I didn't call him by his name. I called him by, I yelled, Pa Kent, and ran over, embarrassed the shit out of myself. But he was very nice and just was like, oh, I love your work and you're so great and blah, blah, blah. You know, I just gushed over him.
That reminds me of something. Now you brought the, Arclight again. They brought up in that little 30-minute documentary with all the directors. John Favreau brought the Arclight, too. He's like, oh, yeah. And I think even Ryan Coogler brought up, yeah, I was there. I think I came down when I was in film school, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. So, like, we might have actually seen the guy before he became famous.
Oh, I'm sure we have. We probably took his ticket or gave him popcorn.
Didn't even know
who
he was.
Yeah.
Like, Favreau. Favreau was talking about, yeah, he was there, I guess, opening weekend, just going to different theaters. I think I do remember that.
I remember him during Zathura, for sure.
Yeah, he was he wanted to see
that. Because I played in the Dome.
That's right. That's correct.
And if those that you that don't know, the Dome was 850 seats?
Yeah, about that.
About 840 to 850 seats, and it was a circular theater, and it was literally a dome created for Cinerama.
Cinerama, yeah.
Is a three-projector system to where it was like almost a 360-degree or 180.
It's almost like the precursor to what IMAX would be, right? In a way.
In a way. It probably, I would say it's better in a way because it does kind of envelop you and it comes around. So in that scope, it is better, but it's much more costly, which is why it didn't last. But Cinerama was a very interesting experience.
Interesting concept.
And Arclight still does, from time to time, show Cinerama films, like How the West Was Won, I believe.
How the West Was Won.
With Jimmy Stewart.
And what's the other one? It was around
this
the world.
This is Cinerama was another
80
one.
80 Days, I think it was around 80 Days,
that was another
like
one.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of good stuff out there.
But Michael Keaton, so we've got an announcement, and we have this Flashpoint universe. And for those that don't know, the Flashpoint was basically the Flash
going back in time.
He fucked up time again. Yep. Basically, it's what he did, and he created a parallel universe to where everything's kind of screwed up.
We have
what the Joker was.
Thomas Wayne
was Bruce Wayne's mom became the Joker in the animated version, at least, and if not the comic book.
Thomas
version.
Wayne is the one who lives, and not Bruce. And so,
right.
So the father takes on the mantle of Batman.
Yeah,
which is a very interesting concept.
Yeah, and they've talked about Jeffrey Dean Morgan playing that character for years.
Oh, he looks the part.
He'd be amazing.
He looks the part.
Anybody listening that has anything to do with casting, Jeffrey Dean Morgan would knock it out of the park, 100%.
Now, of course, he has experience playing comic book characters from. The comedian to
absolutely
to of course the Walking Dead character
Negan yeah
you know
yeah so he's great
and
great as a comedian
great comedian absolutely
but probably the best choice for the comedian that could possibly be the choice of the comedian. And say what you will about the Zack Snyder experience that we've all had, I wholeheartedly think that Watchmen the movie was amazing. I think it was the best Watchmen movie that we're ever going to get. And I think that
still doesn't please Alan Moore.
If you haven't seen – yeah, I know. Nothing will. And if you haven't seen the TV series, I highly recommend that too, particularly now when we're dealing with the environment that they're dealing with all the Black Lives Matter and everything, movement.
I haven't seen it yet, but I heard there was one of the early episodes had the Tulsa Riots, and I was shocked because not many people knew about that.
Right. I know you're a Black man.
I know my history.
I'm the whitest white guy that ever whited. Yeah. I'm going to be honest, I did not know. And that blew my fucking mind.
When you first heard about it.
That blew my mind.
Yeah, me first.
And I looked it up and I was like, holy shit.
Yep.
And it's good. It's amazing to me that it takes a comic book television series
to bring it to the forefront.
To bring my attention to something like that.
Yep.
That my parents didn't tell me.
Yep.
That
they probably didn't
my
know
history.
Either,
no,
possibly.
I'm sure they don't. My history class didn't know.
Nope, it was hidden.
That my college professors didn't know or didn't tell me. Nothing. It took an HBO fucking series.
And from a personal standpoint, I'm glad that it took a mainstream media element to bring this to forefront, because, you know, I knew about the story, but I knew a lot of people didn't know about it. If you try to bring it up, they think you're full of it. Oh, that's
they would think you make it up.
They think you're making it up.
Because it seems
impossible.
Right.
But it goes back to stories I may have told you about my parents, you know, growing up in the Jim Crow South, you know, so some people find it to be unbelievable because you're living in this
such
an era,
I'm doing quote fingers. Modern
times.
Yeah.
But people don't understand, not too long ago, I mean, 50, 60, 70 years ago, isn't really that too long ago, times were really different, if you know what I mean. You know, saying things were very different. Like the laws were different, the way society, the way the culture was different.
Yeah.
It's just like how we are now. 50 years from now, the culture is going to be completely different.
Absolutely.
For better or for worse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So people look back at us in 2020 and 2070, oh, those people were so backwards. So the way we're acting right now might be considered backwards 50 years from now. Our attitudes, you know, our biases.
Hopefully
our
we make it 50 biases. Years from now. Hopefully yeah, you and I biases. Are still alive 50 years from now.
It's a good chance. We'd be 90-something years old. It's a good chance.
Yeah.
Now, at least on my side of the family, my dad's side of the family, they do live in their 90s. So as long as I still have a good chance.
Well, I will say that my dad and my mom have lived longer than their parents.
Their parents. That's
lived.
Good.
Like. Extremely longer. Like, we're talking like at least 10 years.
One reason for that, possibly, it could be a combination of not, you know, not only like modern medicine, but also the fact that you have a strong family, you know, concepts, you know, there's a reason to live for them. Like, okay, I got my kids, I have my grandkids, you know, so when you have like a reason to live.
My parents have great grandkids.
It's
so crazy.
That's crazy. So I think that's
I'm a great uncle.
There you go.
How old, and I'm 40. You know, I'm not that old.
Right. That's true.
Yeah, crazy times that we live in. So a little bit, we'll hurry up and get this wrapped up. But Michael Keaton, amazing actor. If no one's checked him out in The Paper, by the way, which was a Ron Howard directed film.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, what's her name? She gets nominated for films every year.
Meryl Streep.
She was also in this film. And Randy Quaid.
Oh, there you go. Randy Quaid.
Great film. If you haven't checked that out, check that out. Dream Team was another one that was amazing. Also had Christopher Lloyd in that one. It was about mental patients that are on the loose in New York City. And the Peter Boyle, I believe, was also in that one.
Hmm.
Which, if you haven't seen that one, Kevin, it's a great comedy. Highly recommended. I have on DVD. I'm happy to loan it to you.
Also was in Gung Ho. Wasn't it in Gung Ho as well?
He was in Gung Ho as well, which I think had George Wendt. George Wendt was also in The First House, which I just saw a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
For the first time. I was always a House 2 fan because my mom and dad, they didn't allow me to see things with too much gore or anything like that. It was too scary. House 2 was a horror film that was more funny than scary. So they wanted me to see it. They thought I'd enjoy it. I never went back and saw House 1, so I went back and saw that. And it had the guy that played Bull on Night Court.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
What's his name? Something Mall?
Yeah, something Mall or something. Yeah.
Like
M-O-L-L, something like that.
Yeah. Bull. He played Bull in Night Court.
Bull
in
Night
sure.
Court, yeah.
Yeah. So what a great character. A great actor in general, Michael Keaton. Anything you want to add before we go?
I just hope, you know, that the rumors are true, that they're cutting a deal, and hopefully they can complete the deal properly to bring him and Tim Burton back, because it would be a great way to complete a trilogy.
Right. And by the way, get the Batman Beyond miniseries that came out, I believe it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
If you have yet to do so, grab that in comic book form, because that's going through the roof. And if it hasn't yet, I believe it is, and it will for sure.
I spoke to one of the owners at one of our favorite comic book shops, and one of the sponsors of the show, We Can Be Heroes, about that very thing. He said, yep, get your hands on it while you still can.
Yeah, and I believe as of now, they have a copy still available.
I don't know about that, but
they did, like a couple days ago, Batman Beyond number one. They still had it. So We Can Be Heroes does have that book, or at least they did.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're hearing this and you want to check them out, please do Google them. You can find them online. They're in Chatsworth, California.
Instagram.
For sure. Yeah. And speaking of Googling and Instagram, we are on Instagram. We are on Facebook, The Real Short Box. We're on YouTube. We are on Spotify.
Google Play. iTunes.
SoundCloud. iHeartRadio. What else?
Sprecher.
We're on Stitcher.
Blueberry.
TuneIn Radio.
We're everywhere.
Anything and everything you can think of, we're there. So please reach out to us. Hit us up if you have questions or comments or anything. And thank you for this little short podcast we had here on just a minute of Michael Keaton's work, and then just a lot of us just blabbering on about beautiful things in the comic book world and the movie world. So thank you for listening. Thank you for reaching out. And if we don't see you immediately, once things get a little better, maybe we'll see you
at the wonderful, luscious, spacious, palatial comic book shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.